Many people know what to eat, but they don't seem to be able to follow through on what they know. Today's guest reminds us that close to 70% of American adults are overweight or obese, with U.S. consumers spending $109 million every day on diet and weight loss numbers, which is an astounding number. We'll find out the why of these huge numbers in just a moment. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk, and very pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Tricia Nelson. Tricia is the author of Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. Tricia is an emotional eating expert with 30 years of experience helping people address and heal from overeating. And what makes today's conversation perhaps so compelling is that Tricia speaks from her personal experience of losing 50 pounds by overcoming her own emotional eating. Tricia Nelson, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thanks so much for having me, Pamela. Great to be here.
Now, Tricia, before I ask you to tell us your story, I'd like for you to explain exactly what you mean by emotional eating.
Emotional eating is really simply eating that's motivated by a desire to numb out their emotions. So it's basically, it doesn't necessarily mean somebody's binge eating. It's really just when somebody is using food for reasons beyond, you know, sustenance, beyond nutritional need, it's really for emotional reasons that the food is serving them in an emotional way.
Well, but so much of the food that we are exposed to today, and certainly the way it's advertised, it really is all about the emotional experience of eating. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's normal. I believe all people are emotional eaters, you know, because it basically, I think God made us to enjoy food and get pleasure from it, so we would definitely continue to do it and subsist as a race. But there are people for whom it goes way beyond simple pleasure. It's really a dependency on food for comfort, for companionship, for, you know, entertainment, and really to fill a void inside. And that's where it becomes a problem, is when somebody has that empty hole in their soul, if you will, and they're using food to fill it, and it never fills it. And so you have to keep eating in order to get some sense of, you know, just satiation. But it's really a bottomless pit, and that's why it's a problem, is because people don't stop and they can't stop. And then obviously the ramifications of overeating are overweight and all the complications that come from that, like heart disease and diabetes and you know, all different kinds of issues with being obese and lack of mobility, and the list goes on and on.
So if every time I'm happy or sad or angry or upset, I turn to food, I'm an emotional eater.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay, well, that answers that. Tell us, Tricia, your story. You were able to lose 50 pounds. So which quick fix diet did you enter into?
Yeah, none of them. Those don't work. I mean, the fact is, if somebody's an emotional eater, a diet won't fix their problem. And, I mean, the fact is that 98% of all diets fail. So what's happening is people are thinking they have a weight problem, and they're addressing the weight problem with a diet and eating less. But if the way they got overweight in the first place is by using food for emotional reasons, that emotional need is still there. So you take, you know, excess food away from an emotional eater, and they go, you know, they go nuts. I mean, they don't like it, and they can't take it for very long, you know. And it may feel, you know, losing weight has its own obvious emotional benefits. You feel lighter, you feel high, you get a lot of kudos and pats on the back from other people, and so that fuels you for a little while. And that was what happened for me. But basically, it doesn't last very long. And before you know it, those emotions that were being covered up with food start percolating, and they need a place to go. And if somebody is just focused on food and weight, you know, measuring their food or getting the right calories or ingredients, That part of them that was being served by the food is yearning for some kind of resolution. And unless somebody recognizes that they're an emotional eater and they start taking specific steps to deal with that, then before you know it, they'll be overeating and putting the weight back on.
Well, you just said that diets don't work, but you also heard me say that $100 million every day is spent on diet and weight loss products. So why are we spending so much money on things that don't work?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, that's basically, I don't know what the math is exactly, but if $109 million is being spent every year, every day on diets, that's basically $100 million down the drain. Okay, so the reason is because people are looking at the symptom. I mean, overweight is a symptom of overeating, and overeating is a symptom of what's eating me. You know, and to get into my story, I mean, I thought I liked food, Pamela. I just was convinced I just like food, and that was my, you know, that was my line for a long time. But then other people around me were starting to talk about emotional eating, my sister specifically. And I started to recognize that the way I ate was not normal. You know, I'd go out with friends to Denny's or Friendly's or something. I'm from the Northeast, so it was Friendly's up there. But, you know, my friends would order a burger and fries. Well, they'd eat the burger and pick up their fries. I'd eat the fries and pick up my burger. So we're not just talking about eating over your, you know, just like overeating. We're talking about the kinds of foods as well. And the fact is that I was drawn to the sugary, starchy, heavier, more calorie-dense foods because those covered up my emotions. They made me unaware of the emotions inside of me, and it just gave me the kind of a feeling no pain sense. And so that's what people are doing. And so the reason why, you know, diets are short-lived for somebody who is an emotional eater is because, you know, they're treating the symptom of overweight, but not why they overate in the first place. And in order to really have lasting success, anybody can lose weight. I mean, you know, stop eating and you'll lose weight, or eat less and you'll lose weight. But it doesn't last because somebody is still craving that fix, and they have to get it somewhere. And a really good example of this is weight loss surgery. You know, statistics are showing now that people who have weight loss surgery of some kind, whether it's lap band or bariatric surgery, they're turning to alcohol and they're becoming alcoholics. And so this just really speaks to the point that, you know, the size of their stomach is not the problem. That, you know, that's the doctors are treating a symptom, but that person's need for the anesthetic of food, you know, the comfort of food is still there. And because they can't fit much food in their stomach, they're drinking for that same anesthetic effect, that same fix. And obviously that's a problem, you know, but that's really what people are doing is, and it's as just the human condition, I believe we're looking for relief, you know, comfort in different things. It's just that for the emotional eater, their number one go-to is food, and that was certainly the case for me.
As you began to do your own, well, let me ask you this. Why did you begin to do your own work about your own eating? Did someone say something to you, or did you become suddenly magically aware, or what happened?
So I grew up as a fat girl. I mean, I was overweight from a very young age, and I was obsessed with food. I loved to eat. I loved to cook. I loved to serve food to other people, play a restaurant, you know, the whole thing. I was just really into food. And, of course, that's not a problem. I mean, I learned to cook at a very young age, and it was fun. But as I got older and began to gain weight, then obviously it became a problem, and it was really hard for me. Like, I hated being overweight. I had this roll on my tummy that I would scrunch up in my hands and imagine cutting off. I would have fantasies about getting some disease where I would automatically lose weight, or joining the army where I'd be forced to go through boot camp and exercise because I hated exercise. So, I mean, these are some pretty violent, drastic thoughts that I was thinking because I was so uncomfortable with my body but had no solution for really changing it. And so, you know, living that way was hard for me. And then once I started doing different, quote, weight loss solutions like diets, like exercise programs, like, self-help programs, 12-step programs, therapy. I went to an eating disorders therapist at one time. All these different things I tried, the pills, potions, and lotions, nothing I tried worked for me, again, because I was treating the symptom and not the problem. And what happened, Pam, was I just got to a really dark place because I had actually lost a bunch of weight on one particular plan. And I think every person who's been overweight has somewhere in their mind that is saying, if only I were thin, I'd be happy. And it's almost like you have to get what you think you want in order to realize that's not it. That's not going to cut it. And that's what happened is I lost a bunch of weight. And I was, short time, all the Atta girls, being able to wear different clothes. I mean, I had a whole new wardrobe. That filled me for a little bit of time. But then it wore off and people stopped commenting. And then I was just stuck with all those emotions that I had never dealt with because I was so busy just on the diet merry-go-round. And I began to get depressed. And I felt very afraid about that. And this was in the 80s before depression was like a talked about thing and before they were handing out medications so readily. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And it was about that time that I really came to hit a bottom where I thought, you know what, I'm about to go back up the scale again. That's what I always did is I'd lose the weight and then I'd get depressed and then I'd put the weight back on. And I was just about to go up the scale again. And that's when I realized I can't do this for the rest of my life. Like, I can't do the yo-yo thing, which is my pattern. I could not be going up 20, down 10, up 30, down 5. I couldn't do that for the rest of my life. It wasn't healthy physically. And just self-esteem-wise, it took, it was really, I took a big hit. So it was at that time that I did meet somebody who's been on your show, Roy Nelson, and he is a spiritual healer, and he showed me that my problem had nothing to do with food, that it had everything to do with, what was driving me to eat, and started to help me deal with those underlying causes, and that made all the difference in the world to me. So that's really, you ask why, how did I get to change? Well, first of all, it was just hitting my own kind of bottom, if you will, where I just realized I can't keep doing what I've been doing. I can't stay on the diet path, or the weight loss focused path because it's not working, and thank God I realized that before I spent another 20 years doing it. But, there had to be a better way. And then by the grace of God, I was shown a better way, which was, hey, stop focusing on the symptom and start dealing with the real problem.
So for people who are on the yo-yo scale, as so many dieters are, the idea that you would now shift the attention not to the symptom but to what's underneath the symptom, that you would shift your attention to your emotions and what's at your core on a very deep level, that kind of sounds a little scary. I could see lots of people saying, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Let me go get some apple pie.
So let me talk about what that means so it's not so scary.
Okay.
There are three primary drivers of all addictions, frankly. And I consider food to be an addiction just like alcohol and other things. I mean, it has negative consequences. It gets progressively worse. We have withdrawals when we stop, certain foods like sugar and carbs. But bottom line is people who have addictive tendencies are using something and it's serving three purposes, and this is true for food for sure. And food, basically, when somebody is craving food, what they're craving is, I call it the PEP test, okay, P-E-P. And the first P stands for painkiller. So somebody is craving a painkiller, like they want relief from pain. Okay, and I'm not saying this is a conscious thing. We don't think, oh, I want relief from my pain. We think, no, I want a pastry, right? So, but the bottom line is it's coming from a need to distract from something uncomfortable going on inside, and that's often pain. The E stands for escape, so we're not just killing pain, but we're trying to escape, and we're usually trying to escape fear. Emotional eaters tend to be more fearful than your average person. We tend to be more anxious. We worry more. We have a racing mind. And so we use food to just quiet those fears, to escape those fears. We also tend to be very responsible. You know, an alcoholic tends to be more irresponsible, but the overeater goes just to the other extreme. We're like uber responsible, and we carry a lot of weight on our shoulders, and we are, you know, doing so many things for so many people, and we're good caretakers. And so we get burdened by that, and then we just want to, like, just check out, you know, get my food, get my TV, and just check out. The last P stands for punishment, and this is something that people don't always think about, but consider this. You know, I get my favorite binge foods. I get my ice cream. I get my Doritos. I get my, you know, pastries, whatever it is, macaroni, whatever it is I like to binge on. It's not salad. So I get my favorite binge foods, and I get my favorite binge-watchable TV show, and I sit down in front of the TV, and I think I'm treating myself. You know, so much of the time at the end of the week, we've had a hard week. We want to just, you know, check out, chill out, and it seems like a reward. But if you consider what happens, I mean, we go overboard, we keep eating, we don't stop, and then the next day we're bloated, we have zits on our face, we don't want to get together with our friends because we feel, like, disgusting, you know, and we stay in bed all day. Well, that's a punishment. Like, that's what I did to myself. And why am I doing that? Well, because I have deeper lying guilt. You know, emotional eaters are prone to feel guilty much more than your average person. We just take, you know, things stick to us. We take things on. People blame us. We take it on. We blame ourselves. So we've got all this guilt, and then we punish ourselves with food by really overeating and really doing damage. And so these are the primary drivers. You know, the emotions are pain, emotional pain, fear, and guilt. These are the three primary things. So it's not like somebody has to go digging very far or has to go to 20 years of therapy. It's just a matter of waking up and saying, what's going on? For me, I mean, so much of the time my eating was fueled by fear. You know, life was scary to me. It was big and scary. And even though I did a lot of things, I was very bold, you know, and outgoing, but underneath, it's sort of like that Norton antivirus that's running in the back of your computer, you know, virus scan. It's sort of like that, where there's these underlying fears and anxieties that are gnawing at me, and I'm really just numbing them with food. So I don't think somebody has to go on a very deep journey to start to tune in to the fact that there are emotions underlying their cravings, and it's not just a fact of liking food.
You know, the other thing that I think about as I'm listening to what you're saying is that simply because someone experiences fear and guilt, for example, doesn't mean they're actually guilty. And
oh, no. Yeah. It's an emotion.
Absolutely. And so, but that awareness, I think, is almost freeing in some ways. Just because I think I am X, Y, and Z doesn't mean that that's true. So if I try to pull back my food covers, if you will, it doesn't mean that I'm going to find this horrible person that I've been hiding from. I might actually find somebody that I really kind of like and enjoy.
Yes, and the thing is that when we don't want to look at those things, like the things we feel about ourselves, then we can't get to that person that we love, you know. And it's definitely, there are things that we, you know, I mean, emotional eaters just feel guilty. I mean, like, we're really good at it. You know, we beat the crap out of ourselves. You know, we're very hard on ourselves, very self-critical. And so a lot of it is just that overactive mind that is just, like, whooping on us, you know. And so, but the thing is, without addressing that, without stopping and taking a look at that, you know, we can't get to that person that we love, you know, that real person that we are. We've just got all this stuff lying on top of that, and we can't really see the real us. And so that's why this journey is so freeing, because, you know, when we deal with that, then it's like we don't need to cover with food. Food helps us keep this stuff down. The stuff we don't want to see, it keeps us down. And nobody wants to, you know, nobody wants to kind of get deep. I mean, that does sound scary. But the thing is, if they realize the benefits of this, because this is the only way to really break free from the, you know, the food merry-go-round, is to, like, get real and to see ourselves for who we really are. You know, it's that inner journey. This problem is not about food. It's really just, you know, food gets our attention, and then it's about really making peace with ourselves. And when we do that, not only, you know, are we spared from the roller coaster of gaining and losing weight, but we're also able to have better relationships. You know, we have more self-confidence. We're willing, you know, to ask more money for more money at our jobs. I mean, everything gets better. People get the better part of us, you know, when we're not in the food, not destroying ourselves by overeating and hiding out.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to Tricia Nelson, who is an emotional eating expert with many years of experience and the author of Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. We will return with more from Tricia Nelson. About the journey that people need to take as they are looking at what's underneath the excessive eating behavior. And in fact, the more you describe it, the more it begins to sound like not a journey into the bad things about us, but a journey into the freedom that lies ahead of us if we're more aware and mindful of the truth, of the wonderful truths of who we are.
No question about it. In my book, I talk about something called the anatomy of the emotional eater, and these are about 24 character or personality traits that make up the emotional eater. As I said, emotional eating isn't just about overeating or even eating the wrong foods. But emotional eating is really about the way we show up in life. And so and emotional eaters have certain personality traits that are like very pronounced in the way we show up in life. And it's not the same as your average person. And these have to be addressed in order to overcome emotional eating and break free from the trap of food. And some of these traits are, you know, they have nothing, all of these traits have nothing to do with food, and yet they lead to overeating. They lead to that pain, fear, and guilt that I'm talking about. And so it's really important that we take a look at that stuff. And as I said, when we address that, everything gets better. So I'll give you an example, Pamela. The number one trait of an emotional eater is people pleasing. Mm. And you see, we love to, like, say yes. Okay, we love to say yes. We don't want to turn people down. We don't want to disappoint. We want people to be pleased with us. We want to get atta girls, right? And so we are people pleasers. And I think this comes often from our childhood. You know, emotional eaters typically have some kind of trauma from their past. Either they grew up in an alcoholic home, you know, or an abusive home, or some kind of trauma. And what happens is we don't develop a healthy sense of self-esteem. I know I didn't. And so we're always looking outside of ourselves to get this self-esteem, to get this feel-good, you know, and to get a sense of worth. But the problem is we try to get it from other people and from the deeds that we do and the acknowledgement that we get. And just like food, you know, food fills us temporarily, and then we have to keep filling ourselves because it's a very, you know, elusive, you know, sense of satisfaction. So, you know, when we try to please people, first of all, they're not always pleased like we want them to be, to the extent that we want them to be. But we have to keep doing it to keep filling up, you know, this sense of self-worth that we're getting from the outside. And so we're exhausted, we're tired, we've taken on too many tasks, You know, we're running around trying to make people happy, and then they're not happy to our satisfaction, you know, or they may not even notice. And then we're not only exhausted, we're pissed off. So we're like, you know, this didn't pay off for me. And then we go home and we have the I deserve it binge. You know, like nobody else recognizes, you know, my good works. I'm going to reward myself. And you see where this is a problem, people pleasing. You know, it's not really about pleasing other people. It's really about feeling ourselves in a way. And the problem is that it's a dead end for us. And what we really need to be doing is learning, first of all, boundaries where we don't say yes to everything, where we recognize our limitations. And we also start to be self-caring, where we aren't always, you know, burning the candle at both ends, but we're saying, you know what, I need to take some time for myself. You know, if I do this, I'm going to be stressed out, and then I'm going to overeat. You know, I'm going to treat my body disrespectfully. And so that's really what we need to be doing. But this trait of people-pleasing is the culprit. This is what's creating all that churn of uncomfortable emotions, resentment, you know, guilt, anger, just, you know, dashed expectations. But the thing is, we created that ourselves, and the good news is if we create it, we can uncreate it. So we're not victims, you know. We are, you know, participants in our life, and then we can make new choices and start setting boundaries and start saying no, you know. And I think that's so, so important for emotional eaters to learn how to do. Now, it's not easy to do it. My programs are about teaching people how to do this and walking them through, you know, better communication and all these different self-care tools so that they can start to, you know, stand up for themselves and speak up for themselves. But, you know, at the outset, it's like, what does this have to do with food? But as you can see, it has everything to do with food, and that's why diets are silly, because, you know, just treating the symptom and not changing the way you show up in the world, not changing your people-pleasing tendencies or your ability to speak up, you know, will land you right back in the same situation.
You've talked about, you've identified a couple of words that for some people really kind of dirty words. I mean, the dirty concepts, the idea of saying no, I don't know. And then the idea of self-care, oh, that's absolutely not okay. So how do you combat that?
Well, I say, look at the results you're getting. You know, do you like what you're getting? If you like what you're getting, don't change a thing. You know, if you don't like what you're getting, you've got to change, you know, and change everything, frankly. And self-care is vital. And it's, you know, being a martyr is serving nobody. You know, when we're tired and exhausted and stressed and resentful, who are we really serving? You know, we're not serving ourselves, and other people aren't getting the best part of us either. You know, and it's the quintessential example is putting on your oxygen mask first on the plane. You know, who can you help if you haven't put your oxygen mask on and you can't breathe? And that's true for self-care. You know, when I take time for myself and I meditate and I pray and I, you know, do my journaling and my walking and things that are good and nurturing for my body, mind, and spirit, when I do those things, you know, my cup runneth over, and then I have excess. I have, you know, something to give people. If I'm being a martyr and I'm not taking care of myself and I'm working, you know, 12 hours a day, and I'm saying yes to everybody, and I'm just trying to be this next Mother Teresa, I'm going to burn out, and I'm going to be exhausted, my body's going to break down, and I'll be resentful. And that's not how I want to show up in the world, you know? So it's like I help everybody when I fill my cup first. And it is a dirty concept, as I know, but it is vital, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because I think people really need a wake-up call. You know, usually our ill health is a result of our lack of self-care. You know, bottom line is we didn't take care of ourselves. We burnt the candle at both ends, you know, and we thought we were an inexhaustible source of power, and clearly we're not. And if we, you know, take care of our body temple and we start to, you know, put limits on our time so we can give more quality time to the people that we're with, everybody wins.
Are there typical ways in which overeaters show up in addition to the people-pleasing trap?
Absolutely, you know, so many different ways, 24 ways, in fact. So another thing that's really big for emotional eaters is we are deep feelers. You know, we have deep feelings. We feel more deeply than the average person. When we hear sad news, it hits us hard. You know, when people we love are hurting, we hurt too. You know, when we love deeply, and when we hate deeply. So there's a lot of emotion to the emotional eater, and you know, and that's hard because a lot of the time, you know, we're in a world that doesn't tolerate emotions and teaches us to stuff those emotions or be unemotional. And I think it's really important for people to realize, first of all, that God made us as emotional beings. You know, we're physical, we're emotional, we're mental, we're spiritual. And so the emotional is very important. And it's, you cannot afford to overlook your emotional self or really to denigrate your emotional self. And I used to think there was something wrong with me that I was so emotional. And now it's not the case, but it is a liability until you learn how to deal with your emotions. And so much of the time people think, gosh, if I were to stop and acknowledge these emotions, they would overtake me. You know, and really just the opposite is true, is when you stop to acknowledge them, then you can move on. Like, you can move on and don't have to carry it with you. And so that's a really important thing, is for people to learn how to manage their emotions. And right now people, you know, emotional eaters manage their emotions by eating. They just stuff them. You know, they absolutely stuff them. Another problem for emotional eaters is the inability to really speak up. You know, we tend to stuff what we want to say with food. And I say it or stuff it, you know. And so people need to learn how to start speaking up when they have feelings about something and stop judging themselves. You know, we're so hard on ourselves that, you know, when we have something we want to say, we critique ourselves, we edit ourselves, and then we talk ourselves out of saying anything. And the thing is as emotional eaters, we have to start expressing ourselves. Otherwise, it's that never-ending cycle of stuffing. And so these are, you know, these are hard things to do. And I, you know, I would just say, you know, get support to do these things, and so that you're not doing them alone. And this is what I teach. This is how I help people, is, you know, I don't give them a diet. They already know what to eat. You know, it's, everyone wants the diet. Give me the diet. Because that seems so much easier than changing the way we show up in the world, because that is harder. You know, speaking up is hard. It's scary. But you actually don't die from it. And people actually appreciate you for being honest, and not beating around the bush. And there's a whole lot of benefits. But the biggest benefit is you don't have to stuff it anymore, and you don't have to have these cravings. You know, people are always wanting to know where their cravings are coming from. And, you know, is there a pill to stop these cravings or something? What's wrong with me that I crave all these ooey-gooey foods all the time? And the truth is, 90% of the time, these cravings are emotional, and they come from these personality traits that I'm talking about.
The idea that one should speak up and that that's a good thing, again, there's a real learning curve around that issue, because so many people, particularly if they've lived in chaotic homes growing up, speaking up was not necessarily the safest thing, and they might have felt as though they would die if they spoke up. They might have been told they would die if they spoke up. So, you know, the fact that you're saying to people, this is difficult, this is not, you know, I'm telling you what to do, now go do it, I think is really important, again, for those emotional eaters who do have such a skill set of shaming and blaming themselves.
Yeah, no question. That's a lifetime journey. I mean, Pamela, I'm still working on it. Like, I'm not cured. I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm still people pleaser at heart, and I have to, I mean, it's gotten a lot easier for me to say how I feel, but there's some certain circumstances where I'm sweating a little bit before I say it, you know, or I have to write it. I have to write it out first before I say it, you know. So it's, I'm not saying this stuff comes easy, but the neat thing is, and again, I'll just bring back to the fact that, you know, food is not the problem. It seems like the problem, but, you know, by this conversation, I think people can probably see that it's pretty complex and it goes deep, and it's really about life and the way we live our lives. And the good news is that not only will this affect your eating and help you not to have to overeat anymore or even have cravings, but everything in your life will get better. I mean, when you have honest relationships where you say how you really feel and you say it with love, I mean, you don't fire at people, but when you learn how to be honest and authentic instead of always putting a mask on, gosh, your relationships are richer. You know, people have respect for you because you have an opinion. You know, there's so many neat things. And you have respect for yourself. You start to, you know, walk a little taller and hold your head up and feel like, wow, I matter. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're really talking about building that fundamental sense of self-worth where we realize and claim that we matter. Because as you said, I mean, a lot of trauma from our past will teach us that we don't matter, that we're insignificant, that we shouldn't be heard. And so, you know, and we can't blame the people who did that. I mean, they were hurting people, and blaming isn't going to help us get out of this mess. So we have to start saying, how can I reparent myself? You know, how can I help myself and empower myself to say what I need to say, care for myself the way I really require, and then start really living as a worthy person in this world who's absolutely, you know, worthy of abundance and love and prosperity and healing and health and joy and every good thing.
The idea of being an emotional eater, you know, it takes me to any number of encounters I've had with clients where one, if it's a couple or even if it's an individual, somebody is going to say, she's too emotional, he's too emotional, don't be so emotional. So, and that, you know, comes from a long path of all kinds of things. So you're saying, you know what, I am emotional, and that's okay. I just don't have to eat my emotions. Again, that's an extraordinary concept, I would say, for some people.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, I mean, obviously, we don't want to just bleed all over everybody, you know, and so having a community of people, especially if somebody wants to overcome overcome emotional eating, they must be in a community of emotional eaters. It's vital because nobody else is going to understand this thing, this weird thing of being powerless over a cookie, you know. So I, you know, I have a community called the Heal Your Hunger Community that is specifically for people who are overcoming emotional eating, and it gives them the support, and it also gives them, you know, encouragement to speak up for themselves, take care of themselves. I mean, nobody can turn and do this on their own. It's just too difficult, as you said. It's a lifetime of habitual, you know, habitually doing it the other way, and so you've got to have support and community in order to make these changes. But in terms of making peace with one's emotions and the fact that one is an emotional being, I mean, this is still kind of something I'm learning as well. I mean, I'll give you a couple examples. I have a new friend who is struggling with cancer, and she's just a beautiful soul, but we only know each other through a professional association, so we would never in a million years have been friends otherwise. Like, we're just very different. She's very intellectual, very brilliant, and she's very in her head and analytical, whereas I'm very emotional in my heart. So we wouldn't normally have become friends, but just by circumstance we are. But she's struggling with a health issue, and I'm wanting to, like, shower her with love and visit her and give her all this love, and she's a little bit like, whoa, like, that's like, you're coming on a little strong there, girl. And so I'm thinking, wow, like, this is because I'm a really heart-centered, emotional person. That's my orientation to life. But I'm realizing she's not that way. And so, you know, I have to sort of scale it back a little bit. I'm still me, but I don't want to, you know, be overkill either. So I'm just realizing, you know, not everybody is emotional or tapped into their emotional being self. And so we just need to make that okay. And another example is I'm in the health field, and so I hang out with a lot of doctors and people, health practitioners, who are very intellectual, very analytical, very in their heads. And I'm not. I'm an emotional eating expert, and I'm all about the emotions. So I have to just come to realize, like, I'm not like them. And again, even more reason why I need my, you know, my tribe of emotional eaters to relate to, because we are, you know, a bit of an anomaly, or we're just different than your average person, and we have to be. And that's the difference, is I don't have the luxury of being in my head all the time and just being analytical and shut down from my emotions. Like, I don't have that luxury, because otherwise, in order to be shut down, I'll have to overeat the stuff. And so I've come to accept that I'm an emotional being, and there's nothing wrong with it. The analytical, intellectual people are great. There's nothing wrong with them. They do some amazing work in the world. And being an emotional, loving, heart-centered person, not that the other people aren't loving, but I just mean coming from the emotional place that I come from, there's nothing wrong with that either. And I used to think there was, like, I need to cut that part out of me or stuff it down. And I did. I stuffed it down with food. But in order to not overeat, I have to make peace with that person that I am and just realize there's a place for me, and I can spread love and joy and be, you know, I can make it safe for other people to feel their emotions. And I do that, you know, not only for emotional eaters, but sometimes for other people in my life, is that when I am making, you know, when I am at peace with my emotional self, and I'm clear that I'm an emotional person, it makes other people feel comfortable letting down their guard and start to venture into their heart self.
Tricia, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, folks, we will continue with Tricia Nelson, author of Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. And Heal Your Hunger, you say that overeaters both have a fear of trusting and have the ability to trust the wrong people. What's that all about?
Yes, that is one of the traits of an emotional eater and the anatomy of an emotional eater, and gets us into a lot of trouble. And what happens is that because we are often traumatized as children or hurt or, you know, grew up in a troubled home, which I grew up in a great home, but I did experience sexual abuse from a relative. So, you know, that that's some trauma for you. But basically, anybody who's experienced, I mean, life itself is traumatic, so it doesn't have to be something that, you know, marked. But what happens is we get betrayed by somebody, and then we make a decision. For me, I was, you know, certainly had that experience with sexual abuse, and then it's, I made a decision that I'm not going to open my heart to anybody. I'm not going to trust, you know, that it's too, I don't want to be that vulnerable ever again, because I don't want to get hurt. You know, as children, we make these black and white declarations.
Sure.
As a form of self-protection, as you know. And so that was the decision I made subconsciously. It wasn't a conscious thing, but subconsciously, it's like, okay, never putting myself out there again, so I don't need to experience that, you know, I don't want to go through that again. And so we grow up, and we have this wall around our hearts, and we're afraid to trust because we have that indelible, you know, mark of having been hurt on account of trusting. But what happens is, instead of having that wall protect us, it cages us in. And so as adults, we need to trust, we need to love, we need to learn to be, you know, open and in relationship with people so that we can be fed in that way. And if our walls are up, you know, if we're afraid to trust, you know, not only are we cutting ourselves off from that experience of love and connection, But we actually attract people who can hurt us. So the very opposite of what we're trying to achieve, you know, I'm thinking I'm protecting myself from harm. I actually attract people or perpetrators into my life when I'm holding that energy of I'm not going to trust because I might get hurt. You know, thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. And so the more I'm focused on not getting hurt, not getting hurt, not getting hurt, you know, our subconscious just, that's all they hear is getting hurt, you know, and that's what I bring into my experience. And so really the best way I can protect myself is to deal with the hurt, obviously, and address that. And I know you do an amazing job of helping people do that. But deal with those past traumas so we're not carrying them into our present experiences, and we're not attracting, you know, that experience again in our life. And so, you know, that fear of trusting needs to be transformed into the ability to trust. Now, it's typical that we trust the wrong people, but I believe we trust the wrong people when we haven't looked squarely at the situations, at the traumas that we're, you know, that really shaped us. So my experience is, again, back to the conversation of going deeper, you know, when I'm willing to look at that pain, when I'm willing to dig into that sexual abuse and what that was like for me and all the different myriad of experiences around that, when I'm willing to go there and deal with that, you know, and I, my most simple formula is write about it, talk about it, pray about it. You know, I need to write it, I need to cry about it, I need to get it out, I need to talk to somebody who understands and cares, and can be a professional or a close friend. But when I do that, then when I've looked at it squarely, I'm able to see myself. I'm able to learn things about myself. And the more I know about myself, Pamela, the more I can spot other, the more I understand other people. And that's why this inner journey is so powerful, because the more self-aware I am, the more I am aware of everybody, because I know what makes me tick, and I'm better able to spot what makes other people tick. If I'm not willing to take that journey inside, then I'm going to be oblivious to what's going on inside of other people, and I'll just walk right into the trap again. You know, in my experience, the train will keep coming around until I deal with that original pain.
So the train will keep coming around until you get off.
Yep. But that happens by dealing with it.
Absolutely. By not allowing your fear of it to get in the way of your freedom from it.
Right.
The seven C's. Let's talk about a couple of those. What exactly are the seven C's?
The seven C's are, it's really my formula, the seven simple steps to end emotional eating now, and they all happen to all start with C. They don't happen to. I made them all start with C. But but these are just it's a simple formula for overcoming emotional eating. And as I mentioned already, I've already talked about community and connection and community, and that's so vital. So that's one of them, you know. It's two C's, but it's in one of the seven steps is connection community, and people need to be in a community of emotional eaters in order to really get down and deal with this. Another one is centeredness, and this is really, really important, and we've already talked about it regarding self-care, but emotional eaters, you know, people in general are used to, you know, waking up in the morning and darting out of bed and just getting on with their day. The problem is, for emotional eaters, you know, we don't have that sense of self. You know, that's a very fragile thing inside of us. And so we end up, you know, being like a ricochet, you know, out in the world where we're just reacting to people's moods, we're reacting to situations, you know, we're coming from fear. And so we're like a pinball in a pinball machine, and we don't know who we are, and we're being really molded by the situations and circumstances and moods and events around us. And what happens is that we eat to kind of ground ourselves. We eat to sort of find, you know, just some kind of solace from all the fear and all the distress that is created from the day. And if we were to start our day instead getting centered and still and quiet, so we could sort of fill up our tank first, and then go out into the day, we will be better able to respond to life instead of react to life. And that responding means that we're going to have a sense of who we are and what we think and believe, comes back to the people pleaser in us. You know, when we have a better sense of who we are because we've tapped into that, you know, when we've meditated, we've gotten quiet, we've spent some quiet time, we've journaled, we've done some writing about what's going on with us, what our thoughts and feelings are, you know, we've prayed, we've tapped into a higher power and the source, that source of help that can ground us and guide us and protect us. When we tap into that by getting centered first thing in the morning, and that's just a morning ritual. It can be anything, anything that brings peace and helps somebody, you know, really spend some time connecting with their higher self, if you will. When we do that, then we have a much better shot of not reacting but responding throughout the day, but also of saying no when temptation hits around, you know, with food. If I'm stressed out and I'm like a ricochet, it's so much easier to just pick up something that's right sitting right there, or grabbing a, you know, a handful of chips or candies at the table. You know, I just don't have that defense against those things when I'm running around helter-skelter. But if we invest time in ourselves with a self-care routine first thing in the morning, we'll be grounded in that, and that will protect us throughout the day, or at least make it a lot easier. And so that's what centeredness is about. And I have, you know, as I said, several self-care secrets that I recommend to people, but definitely meditation is one, reading spiritual literature, writing, praying, walking. I do a little walk. I call it my walk pray, where I walk and I talk to God, and I put my earbuds in, and so that people think I'm talking on the phone. So into my phone, I put my earbuds in. So that is so vital to me having success in the day with not overeating. And I couldn't do it without it, Pamela. I mean, I'm not cured. I mean, I've lost 50 pounds. I've been in a thin body for close to 30 years by the grace of God, but I every day have to get still and quiet and centered in order to have a chance.
Now, I'm thinking about the single parent, and let's say it's a mom, right, and let's say she's got two or three children and or a baby, and the idea of taking time in the morning to get into a centered, peaceful place almost sounds like a joke and a piece of magic. So talk
right
to that person.
Yeah, well, I know you, okay? I know you. I have many friends who are you and clients who are you. And the thing is that I'm not saying this stuff's easy, but I am saying it's important. It's basically vital. And so, you know, meditation is really hard for parents, you know, especially single moms, super hard. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. And I would challenge somebody to think about the time you spend on Facebook, the time you spend watching the news, the time you spend, you know, on all kinds of things, that on eating, overeating in front of the TV. You know, think about the time you spend on that. Where can you shave off some time and spend it on something that really will make a difference in your life? And so meditation doesn't have to be a long time. I have a client who's a single mom, and she spends 5 minutes being still and quiet and then doing some spiritual readings in the morning. I have another, actually my sister, she's mother of twin girls, and she gets up earlier, like a half hour earlier in the morning. I mean, she used to get up at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning just so she can have the time before her kids wake up. It takes effort. But, you know, so does being overweight, you know, so does being sick from eating too much sugar, you know, or being, you know, hyped up on caffeine and sugar to get through the day because you didn't take the time to do this, you know. So it's really a matter of priorities. Like, we always find time to do the things that are most important to us. And so think, can you go to bed a little bit earlier? Can you shave off your TV time at night? You know, get to bed a half an hour earlier, even 15 minutes earlier, and give yourself 15 minutes in the morning for this. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out thing, but just the effort of making that time for yourself and really making that spiritual connection, it will pay dividends beyond measure. And I even have clients whose kids tell their mother to go meditate because they know the difference. They get yelled at less when their mom has meditated. So it's like there's benefits for all in this.
Well, and it's interesting you would talk about children because it's wonderful modeling, role modeling for children, that it's okay to take a few moments just to calm yourself and sort of be at peace with yourself. So the bottom line here is that you're telling all of us that self-care is not selfish, it's actually healthy and vital.
It is so vital. It serves everybody. It serves the planet when we're self-caring. You know, and the thing is, comes back to the people-pleasing thing, too. Like, we think our kids need us there all the time. They don't. You know, like, they'll be okay for 15 minutes if at the end of the work day we go to our bedroom instead of the kitchen to start making lunch, or our dinner, rather. You know, if we say mom's got to take her quiet time, she goes upstairs, she lights a candle, and she, even if she doesn't meditate, if she lies down for 10 minutes with some quiet music, you know, that unwinding time, that time to breathe, that will give her, I mean, so much sustenance so she doesn't have to go into the kitchen and start eating. I mean, so much of our, you know, 60 or 70, maybe 75% of the time, people are overeating most at night, you know, at dinner time and beyond. And that's because we are all, you know, we're stressed out from the day. And so we have to take that time to unwind. So the time before making dinner is one of the most important times to do that, and it is vital, and everybody will benefit from that, and we don't have to be constantly catering to our kids. You know, they will be okay, and they'll be even better when we take that time for ourselves. It's just nobody can make us do it. We have to claim this for ourselves, and again, that's what, when it comes back to really claiming that we matter. Like, we build self-esteem by doing self-esteemable actions, and only we can do that. But every single self-esteemable action we take makes us feel a little bit better, which makes us feel a little bit worthy of a little bit better care. And it gets progressively better.
You say that there is no bigger bully than self-doubt.
Absolutely.
You know, so many times, again, could not agree with you more, because what we say to ourselves about what we can and cannot do, what we are capable of and not capable of, it can create some pretty challenging internal moments for us.
Right. Yeah, no question. I mean, this is a journey of the soul. I mean, people thought we were just talking about food and weight. No. This is like, this is life stuff. This is the best stuff of all. You know, food just gets our attention. You know, if somebody listening is unhappy with their weight, you know, and they're tired of being overweight, I am so happy, because that is going to move them to take actions that they wouldn't have taken otherwise. You know, I wouldn't be a meditator if I wasn't an emotional eater. It needed a spiritual solution for my eating issue. You know, I wouldn't do half the things I do if it weren't really because I'm driven by the desire to not go back to where I came from. So it is a beautiful thing, and it is about declaring our worth.
Tricia, I know that there's a lot of information at your website. Can you tell us what that is?
Absolutely. It's healyourhunger.com. That's H-E-A-L, healyourhunger.com. And there's a quiz on there I recommend to people if they're not sure they're an emotional eater, or if they think they're an emotional eater but they're not sure if they're a food addict. It's really a spectrum, and you can determine where you are on that spectrum and get a personalized score when you take the emotional eating quiz on my website. It's a free quiz, but you'll get a score to find out where you are on that spectrum and then what level really of solution you need.
Tricia Nelson, author of Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. Thank you so much for your work and for your time today.
Thank you so much for all that you do and for having me on the show. It's really been an honor.
Well, I am absolutely delighted that you, again, are doing the work that is so important for so many. And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a mental health, medical health, or other professional. Remember that you can listen on demand at any time to mindtalk.org and hear any program, any conversation you choose. That's myndtalk.org. There's also the MindTalk app that you can download from your iTunes or Google Play Store. MindTalk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. I would love to know where in the world you are as you're listening today, so do send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. I'd also love to hear your questions or comments or anything else that you would like to share about your experience of this or any Mind Talk program. And again, that's myndtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, that's exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.